And welcome to part three of the rise, the dominance, and the fall of the SEC here on the HalfCarded.com Power Hour. I'm your host, Mitch Pump, co-host Dan Ford. How we doing?
We're doing absolutely fantastic.
Here we go.
I got a true fact for you tomorrow. A guy is coming to fix my bathroom.
Look out. Did your pipes burst?
What turned out is that I live in a modular home, and this is something I really want everybody listening to this to make sure you keep an eye on, is the guy, when they put the modular home in, they used this really cheap, shitty wood underneath one of the showers, and the wood rotted. And then, you know, one day, you know, you just step on the shower, and the whole thing just collapses underneath.
Wow.
And then you pull it out, and it's just like nothing but rotted wood under it.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say to everybody, make sure you get high-quality people to build your home.
Mm.
Also, get an inspection done when you buy a home, always. I know you think, oh, I want to save that $200. Not worth saving it. Get that inspection. So, yeah. But other than that, I'm doing fantastic.
There you go. I'm ready to hop in. Let's talk some SEC. We left off, 2007. So LSU wins the national championship. Nick Saban just completed his second year at Alabama.
Sure. They've had a big step up in year two from year one. Year one, they famously lost to Louisiana Monroe, which was extremely funny.
Yeah.
Extremely funny. It's extremely funny to lose to a Sun Belt team. Always and forever.
And then in their second season, they're ranked number one going to the SEC championship game.
No more laughter.
Yes. This is truly the day when the children died. And Alabama just kind of rolls through everybody. I believe they beat Clemson by two scores that year.
This is pre-Clemson becoming Clemson as we know them.
Yeah. Clemson was number nine, though, so a good program, just not a league.
Well, this is the era of Clemsoning, where every year Clemson would have, like, a great recruiting class, and they would, you know, people would be going, man, this team could really be something in the ACC. You know, the ACC is not as good as some of the other leagues. Oh, man, they just got humiliated by the one team they played that was a test.
I believe they go and beat number three Georgia 41-30. I believe that's the blackout game.
That sounds right.
That does sound right about in that era. That's famously the night Georgia wore black jerseys, which they, you know, Georgia's not really known for wearing alternative jerseys. They've done it a few times, I think. All the fans came in black, all this, and Bama just routed them. Like, it wasn't as close as 40-30. This was more like a game that probably should be like 78-30.
It was an utter humiliation.
Yeah. And kind of like the big night where everyone went, oh, Alabama really is back. Georgia was number three at this time and pretty solid program in the SEC at this point.
And then just Nick Saban humiliates them. And we get that early glimpse of how the era would end there at Georgia, where Mark Richt's era would end. It would be like, can't beat Nick Saban.
And then
you're pretty good,
they keep on rolling. They beat defending champion LSU in overtime. They beat Auburn 36-0. Roll in to play number two Florida in the SEC championship. Number two Florida, led by a guy we talked about last week, Tim Tebow. Tell us about Tim Tebow.
So the thing about Tim Tebow is that he was the only player any white person talked about for about 4 years.
Yeah.
He was a good Christian lad who
he had all of the traits you want from like a white athlete.
Yeah.
He wasn't athletic like traditionally. Was very gritty.
Oh, he was
hard
very
working.
Athletic. That's bullcrap. Tim Tebow
okay,
was
but not
insanely
like,
athletic.
Yeah, not insanely. Like he wasn't Michael Vick.
He was probably a better athlete than Cam Newton.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
He ran like
a
4.540 and he's 230 pounds. Like he was
not
crazy.
As flashy.
He was huge.
Not as flashy. not fleshy.
I don't know about that.
Well, he's white, so he can't be flashy. But yeah, kind of like
if he was prototypical, black, he would be considered insanely flashy.
Yes, but your prototypical, like if you were gonna build a superstar,
he's basically what like every like white suburban kid dreams of being, and that is like as fast as the black guys.
Yeah. But I think this is his first season as a starter. Or is this his second? This is his first, correct?
This is his second year as a starter.
Okay. Junior this year. And
this team has Percy Harvin playing a – nobody knows what position Percy Harvin was because he lined up in the slot a lot, but then he would also motion into the backfield and play tailback. This was back before Urban Meyer knew what a running back was.
Yeah.
Like, eventually at Ohio State, Urban Meyer kind of changed his philosophy about how he, you know, how he built his offenses. And Ohio State had a number of really excellent running backs under Urban Meyer, most notably Ezekiel Elliott. But this was before that, and the Florida offense was structured in such a way where it was basically Tim Tebow's going to run the ball 20 times a game. They're gonna then get like six other guys getting five carries. Some of them are gonna be receivers. Some of them are gonna be wide receivers. Like some of them are gonna be receivers. Some of them are gonna be running backs. No running back is gonna come anywhere close to 1,000 yards.
So this Florida team, Tebow.
They also had a certain somebody playing tight end.
Yeah, well, Tebow in his third year as a player, second as a starter.
Probably his peak. Probably his peak year.
Yeah, they beat the clobber Miami, clobber Hawaii, clobber Tennessee. Tennessee has really fallen off at this point. I think this is kind of when the wheels are coming off. Lose to Ole Miss. Proceeds to not lose another game rest of the year.
Yeah.
They blow out Georgia 49-10. Blow out, drop 60 on Kentucky, 50 on LSU. Drop another 50 on South Carolina. You demolish Florida State. Then you run into Alabama, and they beat Alabama by 11.
Yeah, and it just looks like Alabama's not ready to deal with that level of team at this point. Yeah. Like, Alabama's clearly growing. They're clearly getting better. Nick Saban is clearly upgrading their talent, but Florida just looks like they're on another – they're on another level from them.
And I believe Bama would go on to lose to Utah. Kind of lose to Urban Meyer twice in a weird way.
Yeah, that was Brian Johnson was the quarterback. They had like a 5'9" quarterback who was really athletic, and Kyle Whittingham had an excellent defense, and their offense was basically Brian, go make some plays.
Yeah, and they won. They clobbered Alabama, 31-17.
This was the first time I ever remember some team in the bowl going, well, we just didn't care that much.
Yeah, that's probably always been talked about.
I just never remember a team like making it so loudly stated that, because this is when Nick Saban made the famous comment of, well, you know, I really didn't care much. I mean, I just wanted to be out there recruiting. You know, so I really didn't care all that much about this game. It really gets in the way of your recruiting. And everybody just became, oh, my God, Nick Saban's complaining about playing in the Sugar Bowl, getting in the way of his recruiting. Little did they know.
Traditionally, looking at this now, the SEC Championship runner-up tends to win more than they lose, I will say.
Yeah. Well, usually, this either goes one of two ways. You either get the completely hungover, fuck football, this is bullshit, we lost. Or you get that whole, Georgia is going to go play Iowa in the, you know, in the champs.com bowl or whatever champs is. And then they're going to beat them by 800 hungover with their backups.
Yeah.
Because I think part of this is that the SEC's bowl record for the runner-ups probably gets worse when the Big Ten gets better. Because, like, that whole, like, Citrus Bowl game where, you know, a lot of times the Big Ten was sending a Big Ten West team that had absolutely no business being in the same field.
Looking at just from 2014, the SEC Championship runner-up has beaten the Big Ten two times and lost once.
One of those times is what, South Carolina, Michigan?
Florida, Michigan, 41-7. Okay.
When was the South Carolina Michigan game where Jadeveon Clowney ended that one guy's soul?
Well, I don't think they wouldn't have been a runner up because that wouldn't have been 2010.
Okay.
Yeah. We're talking strictly runner up here. So Florida goes on to win the national championship. But does Tebow win the Heisman that year?
He does. He is the undisputed consensus best player.
Yeah, was that the first time?
Like, nobody thought anybody else deserved to win the Heisman that year, which is what happens when you have a great player who is legitimately great and is also a white Christian.
And they were blowing out everybody.
Yeah, well, other than Ole Miss.
You know, it's not like Florida, like most teams they beat by double digits.
I mean, it was as clear and as solid and as outstanding a team as you're ever going to see. Yeah. To the point where their offensive coordinator gets hired away. I bet that won't come back to bite anybody.
Yeah.
I bet we'll never think about losing that offensive coordinator.
Well, the next year, 2009, they put up 13 points in the SEC Championship.
Can you remember their offensive coordinator that year?
It was the boy, Steve Adazio.
Adazio. Adazio was there. Was a longtime Urban Meyer offensive line coach.
Yeah,
we've been with him for a while, and he got promoted up to offensive coordinator. And suddenly, Florida's offense became run the dive. And I just remember that being the biggest meme in the SEC that year, is that Florida's gonna hashtag run the dive, and every play they ran was inside zone read. So yeah. It was either running back running straight up the middle or Tim Tebow pulling it and running just off.
Yeah, and if you go through, like, some of their scores, they're not dropping, like, huge points on everybody again. They only beat Tennessee by 10. They scored 13 versus LSU and beat them. They beat Arkansas by a field goal.
It's just like they just got enamored with the fact that Tim Tebow is so physical and, like, was such a good inside runner that they just thought, well, we don't have to do anything else but just run up the middle with him.
Yeah.
Anything else?
A noticeable drop in their offense, though, for sure.
Oh, God.
And they run in, but they're still number one all year. They didn't lose a game.
It's the classic, like, okay, a defending national champion brought key players back, but they're clearly nowhere near as good as they were.
Yeah.
And they're just sort of limping by all year, and you're just waiting for when somebody gets them.
And somebody would get them. Number two, Alabama, doesn't lose a game all year. And those same teams that, you know, maybe Florida's beaten by 3 or, you know, 13, Bama's crushing them.
Yeah.
They crush Arkansas 35-7. Crush Ole Miss 22-3. That's one to circle that. Kind of remember that old Miss Alabama game for the future here. But yeah, they beat everybody in their sight, basically. They roll in, they play Florida, they shut Tebow down.
Tim Tebow famously does, like, the crying on the sideline, you know, covered in like red from the Alabama's end zone.
It's crimson.
It's wearing crimson, Paul. Don't call it red. Red's for commas.
And then they go to play number two Texas in the Rose Bowl and beat them 37-21.
One of the all-time what-if games because Colt McCoy gets injured in the first quarter, definitely. It might have been the first series.
Yeah, it was super early, if I remember correctly.
And does not come back into the game. His shoulder's all fucked up. And Garrett Gilbert comes off the bench and has this amazing game against Alabama, and almost leads them back, and they almost like look like they were going to make a comeback. And I think if Colt McCoy plays that whole game, I think Texas probably wins. And Mack Brown retires with his second national title.
Yeah. But instead,
he stuck around because he saw Garrett Gilbert come off the bench. And he was like, well, shit, I might have another one. Because at this point, he had had 7 straight years of amazing quarterbacks. Because he'd had Vince Young followed directly by Colt McCoy.
Yeah.
And so it had been so long with amazing quarterbacks. And he was like, well, probably time to retire now. You know, go ahead and get out while I'm on top. But then he thought, oh, man, this Garrett Gilbert's going to be 3 straight. Jesus, I can't leave now. And then Garrett Gilbert never had another good game in his life. So, and Texas began their downward spiral. So on the list of things Nick Saban killed, Mack Brown's career is another one.
Yeah, and it's the first title for Nick Saban at Alabama. He's back. But will this last for Bama? It doesn't look like the next year, because the next year is kind of defined by 2 guys who had left Florida football.
Yeah, I do want to talk about that Bama team just a minute, because they were one of the, like, this was the era where Bama was so frustrating if you were not a Bama fan, because you always looked at their offense and went, God, we can beat them. This sucks, because their quarterback was Greg McElroy, and I've never seen a quarterback that shitty win that many games, because it was at no point when Greg McElroy was quarterbacking the Alabama did you think, well, they're unbeatable.
Yeah.
Like, there's no way they're going to lose with the steady hand of Greg McElroy. But it's just like Nick Saban had built that team into such a way where it's like, the quarterback doesn't have to be good.
Did it matter?
We're just going to run up the middle over and over again in inside zone, and you're not going to block it.
Yeah.
Like, you're just not going to stop.
You're just going to get blocked, basically. Yeah. And then our defense, they're going to get some turnovers.
They're going to annihilate you. Our defense is going to be so dominant that we
can. But our offense doesn't have to be good, because our offense is working with 30, 40 yards most of the time. I'd like to see that, like, kind of going back and charted. How often the hidden yardage offense starts with, you know, less than 60 yards to go. It probably happens a lot.
Yeah, and this was at the point where Alabama's depth had finally gotten built up to Alabamian levels, where it was like, well, they can roll out dudes on special teams who could be starting for Iowa, and they're just playing special teams for Alabama.
But, Dan, I want to transition to the next year, 2010, a season defined by 2 guys who had left Florida. We didn't mention this earlier. This is probably a good thing to talk about. First team, SEC East winner that year, 2010, South Carolina, coached by Steve Spurrier in his 6th season at South Carolina. Let's talk about that real quick.
And he's probably my favorite person in the history of college football. But Steve Spurrier we had talked about him in our first episode. He basically built the SEC into what we now know it as.
Yeah.
Because that Florida team, 1, came out of nowhere, and 2, was just untouchable in the conference.
Yeah,
Urban Meyer isn't
winning at Florida without Spurrier there.
And he's at a place that had never won before, and suddenly they're like the best team in the conference.
Yeah.
He hears the siren song of the NFL, and he goes to Washington. He lasted there for 2 years. The thing that everybody kind of misses about Spurrier in the NFL is that he actually was not that bad. His first year at Washington with the players he wanted at quarterback, and they were supposed to be temporary because, obviously he didn't think Shane Matthews and Danny Warfel were long-term solutions. But they went 7-9 that year and had a top 20 offense with 2 guys who everybody in the NFL would have said have no business being in our league as starting quarterbacks. But then Dan Snyder forces him to draft Patrick Ramsey from Tulane. Patrick Ramsey is a terrible quarterback.
Yeah, who do you know who Spurrier wanted over Ramsey?
I don't.
Patrick Ramsey was awful.
Yeah, Patrick Ramsey was like the classic looks great on, in shorts player.
I could say he
could throw the ball a mile, but he had no accuracy and he was an idiot.
If we're looking at this draft class, 2019, I'd say it's like the like Jared Stidham or something. Like a guy who's probably going to impress in workouts is just awful in any other situation.
Yeah.
Maybe Drew Locke, but he was better this year, so I don't. Oh, no, I'm sorry. Who's the kid from Duke? Jones?
Yeah, that guy that everyone's talking about for no reason.
Yeah, that's Patrick Ramsey, if you want to put it in, like, 2019 goggles. It's the quarterback from Duke this year who will go, like, top 10, and then he'll be out of the league in, like, 5 years. Or out of, like, the eye of the league. He'll probably be a backup. Anyway, Spurrier leaves Washington.
Yeah, he quits Washington after his second year and famously leaves a ton of money on the table. Like, he was just like, fuck this. I don't want to be here. I'm not going to be here. I'm leaving. I believe he wanted Rex Grossman, his former quarterback at Florida, by the way. So, like, you know, he's basically comes out and he says, well, I'm not getting to be the coach. You know, they're not going to let me coach the ball club, so hell, I ain't going to be here no more. There's a, you know, Ron Zook has just been fired at Florida, the way it ends up lining up. There's a famous apocryphal story that Spurrier's people contacted Florida about, you know, is there any mutual interest, you know, I have some interest in coming back to Florida. And Florida told him, well, we're going to need you to do an interview because we're trying to do a full search. And Spurrier's famous line, and we don't know if this is true or not, was, yeah, my interview's this. Go look at all the trophies in the fucking athletic department now. That's my fucking interview. Which is the greatest response ever. It's like, who the hell are you to tell me that I need an interview? I'm the reason any of you have jobs.
Yeah. So Spurrier ends up going to a program that's...
So Spurrier gets turned down by Florida because they want to hire Urban Meyer. Like, basically, Florida's athletic director had decided he was hiring Urban Meyer.
Which, in retrospect, fine move. Urban Meyer did great at Florida. Won more national championships than Spurrier did there.
And Spurrier probably wouldn't have been as good the second time around.
Yeah. So, all in all, probably a good move. And probably the best move for Spurrier because Spurrier got to go do what he does best. And that's build.
And there's this minor, like, Spurrier derby. Like, once it becomes clear he's not going to go back to Florida, you start getting a bunch of schools all in the same area, like, huh, we wouldn't mind having Spurrier. Because, like, Duke fans, like, the Duke job came back open. Obviously, he's the best coach in modern-day Duke history, but they end up with Cutcliffe, who ended up actually being a more successful coach at Duke when all said was done. When all was done. NC State had interest in Spurrier. UNC had some interest in Spurrier, and Spurrier has since said if they had gone ahead and fired their coach that year that I was available, because they ended up bringing John Bunting back for an extra year, I would have loved to take the UNC job. Now, it might just be him fucking with UNC, because he loved fucking with UNC, so we don't know. Yeah. But the job that does end up being open is South Carolina, and Spurrier's wife told him, God, please don't make me go to South Carolina. And he said, nope, gotta be South Carolina. They're in the SEC. And South Carolina was the school that got the golden ticket to join the SEC back in 1992 that really didn't deserve it, but they needed a 12th team. They had been everybody's whipping dog ever since they had joined the league. But they had a very loud fan base. It's one of the things Spurrier talked about.
And some groundwork for Spurrier was laid there by another legend, Lou Holtz.
Well, Lou Holtz left him nothing in the cupboard. But hiring Lou Holtz had at least proven to Spurrier that they cared about football.
Yes. Lou Holtz is an integral part to why Spurrier probably came to South Carolina. Whether or not you think he left him anything, he did also helped bring some more excitement to the program and gave them what, like, some years where they won like 4 games, right? So,
well, I think part of what happened with Lou Holtz is, like, South Carolina kind of had some delusions that all they had to do was hire a great coach and they'd be good again.
Yeah.
And what Lou Holtz taught them is that, no, there's some major foundational things that we're behind the rest of the league at.
This is going to take a decade.
Yeah. And when Spurrier came in, his big thing was, we got to have a new athletic facility. We've got to have some new luxury boxes in the stadium to help raise revenues. And we've got – basically, it was like the boosters have got to come in and pony up for a bunch of shit that this school doesn't have, that other SEC teams have.
Yeah, and because but Spurrier's thing was, you're going to have a lot of fun.
Because he was Spurrier, and he was interested in coming, and he was interested in getting a membership to Augusta, because South Carolina's – one of their alumni is the guy in charge of Augusta National.
Yeah, and for some people that don't know, Augusta could very well be just in South Carolina. It's right, literally at the border. Someone say
What was his name? Hootie Johnson. It was a very like you sound like you're a member of the Klan name.
Hootie Blowfish.
Hootie Blowfish was a South Carolina alum, and then Spurrier comes back to the SEC. Now he did not come back in and have the same success immediately that he had at Florida. Clearly, the league had adjusted to some of the things that he was very successful with offensively. Clearly people in the SEC had seen what NFL teams had done to his offense, which is basically Spurrier got blitzed out of the league. He just could not, he did not have very good answers for some of the zone blitzes that were used against his offense. But what Spurrier did at South Carolina was in some ways more impressive than what he did at Florida. Because what he did with Florida was just come in with like this major advantage X's and O's wise over the rest of the league. At South Carolina, he just rebuilt them from scratch, brick by brick, piece by piece, and did it the old fashioned way, which is just out recruiting Clemson and UNC and NC State and getting the best players from South Carolina to come to South Carolina for the first
time. Kind of, Dan, if you look at
getting
around
kids
this
from
time,
Atlanta,
too,
you know.
If you look at around this time, too, in 2010, you kind of go back and look at the SEC standings from that year. Florida is 500 in the SEC. Georgia has a losing record overall and in the SEC. Tennessee's awful at this point. So three of your biggest recruiting rivals are down. Because we forgot to mention, too, Urban Meyer's out of here, right, at this point?
Well, he's this season is – this is his last season, if I'm not mistaken, because they have the 1 year after Tim Tebow's senior year. Urban Meyer retired for about 2 weeks, and then Florida talked him back into coming back.
Yeah,
and they had one last year with him and John Brantley at quarterback, and it was terrible. And they went like 8-4, and then Urban retired like properly and did not come back to Florida. They made a very bad hire in Will Muschamp, who made an even worse hire for his offensive coordinator when he hired Charlie Weiss. And so Florida begins their downward spiral.
Yeah. And then so part of the understanding, like, well, how did South Carolina and later on, how did Missouri do this? Because the East kind of fell apart around this point. Rick realized, I got to kind of rebuild at Georgia. This isn't working. So at this point, Georgia's like kind of in a rebuilding phase. You'll kind of stop seeing them.
Tennessee is an all-out dumpster fire.
Actually, I'm sorry. We'll see Georgia actually back in the SEC Championship next year. Yeah. And probably was a play away from being national champions. But Georgia's having to reload this year in 2010. Florida's fallen off. Tennessee's awful. Who's even the coach at this point? Derek Dooley?
Yeah, this is Derek
Disaster. Dooley. Yeah. Who's a disaster as a head coach?
Over on the ACC side, Clemson every year is losing in an incredibly embarrassing fashion to some.
No, Clemson's lost a lot of goodwill they have of recruits because they became Choker U. Like, who wants to go there?
Yeah, they are Choker U.
Yeah, UNC, I think, in the midst
UNC
of a scandal.
UNC has had the NCAA stuff. Butch Davis is out, so suddenly UNC's recruiting goes down.
And NC State just sucks.
NC State is, like, in that Tom O'Brien, well, we can win 7 games every year with the 70th best recruiting class. And then everybody at NC State is going, why do we have to have the 70th best recruiting class, though?
Yeah.
Like, can we not get some talent here, too? And so, like, NC State is a non-factor in recruiting. And so you start to see Spurrier coming into Charlotte in a big, big way.
And the thing you know we talked about, too, he got them to build new facilities. So if you're Spurrier, you look at Georgia, who hadn't built, you know, new facilities recently at this point, I don't think.
No.
You want to play there or come here with brand new shit? And young guys want to be around new shit. They're young. They want to be around young equipment. So that helps South Carolina kind of like the cool program.
Player that really changed everything for him was Marcus Lattimore.
Yeah.
Because Marcus Lattimore was probably the best high school running back in the country, and Spurrier got him.
Yeah.
And their offense became Marcus Lattimore left and Marcus Lattimore right. You know, Stephen Garcia was their quarterback, the mercurial Stephen Garcia, we can't leave out the fact that Stephen Garcia beat the piss out of Nick Saban's defense in a more comprehensive way than probably any quarterback has ever done until Trevor Lawrence.
And this team then also has, let's go through some guys who I know are in the NFL. Alshon Jeffrey at receiver, who's in college was a freak. Melvin Ingram, who I believe is still starting for the Chargers at defensive end. So right there you've got, and if Lattimore doesn't tear up his knees in the NFL right now, so yeah. You've got three guys who are all pro-ish.
Wow.
And Stephen Gilmore, who had a Pro Bowl career.
Yeah.
So this is a good South Carolina team. They've recruited well. The fruits of their labor started to come to fruition. They run into Auburn. He's undefeated. Yeah. They got this guy at quarterback, Cam Newton. Kicked out of Florida for stealing a laptop in what, 2008?
Which had a girl's name scratched into it.
He tried to spray paint, a thug right there, clearly. That's the label he's given.
Clown.
Kind of learned about the culture at Florida at the time. Maybe young Cam was influenced.
Yeah, maybe he had, maybe he just had, like, you know, bad senior leadership.
Yeah, and like, maybe he just was a dumb kid, made a mistake, paid for it, grew up. Because if you look at Cam now, I mean, you could say some stuff about his on the field or whatever, but he's a pretty good guy. He doesn't get a lot of legal trouble, isn't hitting women.
Maybe that girl gave him a laptop. Who knows?
Yeah.
And then her parents found out she was dating a black guy, and then suddenly he stole
it. So, he goes to play JUCO in here. He comes to Auburn. There's a lot of controversy surrounding. You want to talk about that, Dan? Be a little less
biased. Yeah. Well, I think I can... I mean, I know what I believe happened.
Yeah.
He was set to come to Mississippi State to play for his old coach, Dan Mullen. And then Cam Newton's father, who I believe is a pastor, went to Mississippi State and said, I'm going to need a donation. My parishioners are going to need a donation. And it's going to need to be, I believe the figure was $250,000 is what we're going to need to rebuild our church sanctuary.
Yeah.
Mississippi State boosters balked at that figure, and Auburn's boosters didn't, because as we all know, Auburn's boosters are more godly, and they are always willing to come help out a church.
Yeah, and Auburn then, the University of Second Chances, Cam Newton's second chance, Nick Marshall's second chance, Trey Matthews, a second chance later on, so the Christ-like qualities of the Auburn Tigers. This makes a lot of sense.
I just think deep down, all Auburn boosters are just very supportive of the church, first and foremost. Above all things else.
Or you can look at this, Auburn boosters are woke, and they know these players should be paid, so they're doing it. So who's the bad... Are they bad guys for paying for Cam Newton? No, I don't think so. And I think the bad guy here is the NCAA.
And I think... Well, obviously that's the bad guy.
Yes.
I'll just never forget that when the 30 for 30 about all this happened, what was Cam Newton's famous line? Look, I can't talk about that. It's an ongoing investigation. And he just smiled like the biggest shitty grin in the history of the world.
But Dan, we haven't talked about him a ton, maybe because I'm a fan and I don't want to talk about him too much, but that kind of personifies what Auburn is. Like, kind of like a school who will cheat and, like, they'll lie to your face about it, but kind of wink at you, too.
Is that fair to say? Auburn are lovable rogues, I would say.
Auburn is like your uncle.
Ole Miss are shitheads. Auburn are lovable rogues.
Yeah.
Auburn is like. You just can't be mad at Auburn.
Auburn's your cool uncle who your mom doesn't want you to hang around.
For good reason, too. She's not just being rich about it.
But it's kind of worth it sometimes.
He's that uncle who had you hide his beer underneath your seat when he got pulled over by the police.
And this is an Auburn team to go through, like, let's just go through what the coaching staff was. They bring in Gene Chizik, awful hire, right?
Can we talk about, right fast, Like when Gene Chizik got hired, what that? Like,
Charles Barkley called it the most famous Auburn alumni, not named Bo Jackson. said it was racist, and he was probably right, because why would you hire Gene Chizik over like a black guy?
Well,
any black guy.
I will say this. I will say this now. The guy that Charles Barkley wanted to hire was Turner Gill.
Yeah.
And Turner Gill had just come off a winning season at Buffalo. Yeah. Buffalo was only about 3 or 4 years removed from going 2 seasons without winning a ball game.
Yeah.
So it was an accomplishment to go undefeated, or to, not to go undefeated, to win, have a winning season and make a bowl game at Buffalo.
Well, you might as well be undefeated if you make a bowl game.
But, I mean, if you look at the statistical analysis of that year's Buffalo team, they were like the 110th team in the country. They were absolutely a shitty team that just had some close game luck.
A team that got coached up.
It was very clear that Turner Gill maybe had a little bit more to prove. Turner Gill ended up at Kansas, and he was terrible. He ended up at Liberty after that, and he wasn't that good there either. So,
And Chizik, though, probably wasn't that good either. Because you know who the real
had a 5-1 record here at Iowa State before they hired him.
The real innovators here, because like that Auburn team doesn't win without defense, and you have our boy Ted Roof, defensive coordinator. We want to talk about Ted Roof at all?
Well, Ted Roof, Georgia Tech alumni, was a Georgia Tech defensive coordinator when they had their resurgence in the late 90s. Yeah. And they came back after being completely shit in the mid-90s.
But respected.
And then wound up as the Duke head coach and is one of the least successful Power 5 head coaches of all time.
But as a pedigree, he's a decent defensive coordinator.
I believe he won 2 games in 3 years at Duke.
The bigger thing here is Chizik brings in Malzahn, Gus Malzahn, as the offensive coordinator. And you pair a guy like Malzahn, a guy like Cam Newton, and you're going to get magic every time.
Yeah, we talked a little bit about Malzahn in the last episode because of how things went bad at Arkansas. But just to let y'all know where he had been, Gus Malzahn leaves Arkansas after 1 year. That thing is the worst, most messy drama in the SEC. And then he goes to Tulsa as their offensive coordinator for what was his name? Todd Graham.
Yeah.
Leaves a job every 2 years. And he had just rolled off like two or three amazing offenses. Like at one point, Tulsa under Gus Malzahn led the country in rushing and passing, I believe, in the same season. Like it's just these incredibly balanced, incredibly good offenses that ripped you apart in the air and ripped you apart on the ground. And God help you if you were in the Conference USA.
And I want to say really quick, Malzahn comes in with Chizik in 08, right?
Yes.
Auburn immediately becomes the 16th best offense, total offense in college football, second in the SEC. So, like, instantly, even without
a terrible quarterback. Yeah. Because that was, like, the quarterback who was, like, Gus Malzahn's first quarterback there was this guy who could not throw the ball more than 8 yards in the air. Was it Lindsey? Was that his name?
Let me look that up really quick. I'm sorry.
But the team before, you know, Chizik and Malzahn show up is the one of the most like hilariously bad.
Is it Chris Todd?
Chris Todd's definitely it.
Yeah.
Can we talk about that last Tuberville team?
Yes. Oh wait.
So Tommy Tuberville is getting his ass kicked by Spurrier or by Saban every year now.
Yeah.
Things have turned in a bad way.
Yeah. I mean, he's going 5-7, 2-6 in the SEC, so you're only beating 2 teams in your conference.
And there's this offensive coordinator over at Troy who's been in the SEC before. His name is Tony Franklin. Tony Franklin was on the Kentucky staff with Hal Mumme that beat Alabama. He has made a great name for himself. After everybody got fired at Kentucky over NCAA violations, Tony Franklin started going all over the country selling the air raid offense to high schools. You would pay Tony – if you were a high school
like an old school, like, traveling salesman thing?
Like, basically the monorail guy from The Simpsons.
Yeah.
He would show up. Like, you would pay –
Or Dan, maybe more famously, the Music Man.
I think The Simpsons is more famous.
Okay.
But you would pay Tony Franklin like $500 or whatever, M-Trans, and he would show up at your high school and basically teach your coaches how to run the air raid. And then sit through your first week of practice. And then after that, you know, he would basically just like be available to answer any questions that you, and you'd send him game film. And he'd basically just be this consulting coach who spread Mike Leach's offense all over the country. Tony Franklin is probably more responsible than any other person for what high school football looks like today, because he was have briefcase, will travel. If you pay me, I will show up at your school and teach you this offense. He had then gotten a chance to get back into coaching himself at Troy, you know, there in Lower Alabama, over there on the Gulf. And Troy's offense was suddenly one of the best offenses in the Sun Belt. And I think they had beaten an SEC team that year. So Auburn boosters tell Tommy, your offense sucks. You need to get this guy in here. Two things happen. One, Tony Franklin, for people who don't know, is a massive, massive socialist. He is as politically left-wing as any football coach you have ever met in your life. When I say he's a socialist, I mean like he was like Bernie Sanders, way too conservative for
me. You thought Bernie Sanders was a Republican.
Like, he was like, you know, the only person I will ever consider voting for is Ralph Nader, and that is only as a protest vote until we can get a real left-wing Democratic Party.
He doesn't even want a social democracy. He wants a people's republic.
Like, he is absolutely, like he is, he's not even a Trotskyist.
He's a tanky.
He's a tanky, yes. He is absolutely a tanky.
But anyway, comes to Auburn, Auburn sucks.
And Tommy Tuberville, for people who don't know, ain't that.
Tommy Tuberville might be a Republican governor of Alabama.
One day, yeah. So, you get this guy who comes on staff that nobody really wanted there, that the boosters forced him to hire. They don't personally like him, like on a personal level.
Because Franklin's pretty upfront. It's not like you get him drunk and then he talks about it. Like, he's a pretty guy who wears it on his sleeve, right?
Yeah, he just shows up wearing an Allende shirt, you know, and it's just like, yeah, here I am. Love me for who I am or don't. He's basically like a Felix Biederman post, ironic post, which is just like, you know, either get out of the way. Lead, follow, or get out of the way. I'm lib. So he's already off to a bad start with that coaching staff. And then his, like, the offensive, like, it's just Tony Franklin who comes in. It's the same quarterbacks coach they had the year before. It's the same line coach they had the year before. And all of those guys, as Franklin is trying to explain to him how this offense needs to run, are just like, that sounds like communism to me. We're not doing that. And so basically what Auburn ends up with is they never actually run Tony Franklin's offense. Like, from the get-go, he's basically sabotaged and Tuberville refuses to run it. So they basically just end up coming out every week in spread formations and then trying to run up the middle.
Yeah.
You know, run all the same stuff they had under Tuberville.
To be fair, the quarterback at Auburn around this time is awful.
Man,
probably a good guy. Maybe.
There's a lot of noodle arm quarterbacks who've been successful in the air raid, but yeah. Auburn, Tommy Tuberville just wasn't interested in trying.
Yeah, and, but anyway, it cost both of them their jobs.
I just want to talk about the worst game I ever saw in the history of the SEC.
Oh, is this
which was the Tony Franklin on that year? State Tony Auburn. Franklin. This is the Mississippi State Auburn game.
Yeah, we just had our 10-year anniversary of this baby.
We just had our 10-year anniversary. Just search. Auburn, Mississippi State, Baby I'm Burning, for the highlights of this game set to the classic Dolly Parton song, Baby I'm Burning. And the final score of that game, 3-2.
We might need to go back and revisit that game one day.
Yeah, everybody gets fired. You beat Mississippi State, especially that Mississippi State team, 3-2, and everybody getting fired.
Yeah.
Everybody getting fired.
Everybody's gone. So in comes Gene Chizik. From Iowa State, he had won, four games in the previous year?
I think he'd won five games in 2 years.
But he had been at Auburn when they went undefeated in 04. He had a history there. Hiring
the boosters liked him.
So it makes sense. Maybe it's not the best one, but it makes sense. But the big key here, the big key is he gets this Malzone guy.
The boosters got what they wanted because basically the boosters got the head coach who was a guy they were comfortable with, and they, you know, Tony Franklin didn't work out. Well, let's try another guy that all the high school coaches love.
Yeah.
Who runs a spread offense. Gus Malzahn. You know, it's like, and, says everybody at Auburn was obsessed with the idea they needed to have a more high school friendly offense.
No, which it makes sense because it's hurt. We've seen it recently. Like, it's hurt FSU in recruiting to not have an offense that's, and on the field, have an offense that, like, isn't tailor made to, like, the talent around you. You know, no one in Florida runs pro style. Maybe FSU needs to run some more spread. And we'll see if they see some success in the next few years with Taggart.
Yeah.
So it's not just, you know, some people might think of that as like dumb booster talk, but it's a smart move because you got to do what the high schools are doing because that's what kids are good at. Football changes.
And plus, there's a, I think Auburn boosters for the ones are a little bit more rational than some of the other people in the SEC because they saw what Nick Saban was doing and then just went, well, let's do something opposite.
Yeah.
And it took the SEC a very long time to figure out that was the right move.
Yeah. So this Auburn team, Dan, pretty good, but they start off the year. They barely beat Mississippi State by 3. They go to OT versus Clemson. They beat South Carolina. And then a lot of these games are really close. So this is not like a dominant team, right? It's a lot of it's Cam Newton just being amazing. And maybe having the single best season in NCAA football history.
And the other thing when you talk about this Auburn team that you can't leave out is an innovation of a particular play.
Yes.
This particular play, I think the earliest I can remember anybody running this play was 09, which I think was like a year before this team.
Yeah.
And it was run by TCU with Andy Dalton. And it's called, well, it's got, most coaches I hear call it the power read. But if you're an NCAA football fan or a Madden fan, you know it as the inverted veer.
Yes.
It becomes the staple play under Cam Newton. And basically, in short, what power read is it's a zone read where you're reading the front side instead of the back side.
Yeah.
So that you get more blockers out front. It's more of a physical downhill run play. You leave the end man on the front side of the play unblocked. You pull a guard who's going to block the next level. You read that man on the end, and you either give the ball to the running back who's going to run outside, and he's going to have that edge sealed because the tight end and the tackle are sealing the outside linebacker, and the guard is coming to the second level, and the defensive end has running himself out of the play. Or if he stays wide to take away the running back, the quarterback just goes straight up the middle. And some teams are afraid of running it because you're using your quarterback as an interior runner. You know, instead of him coming along the edge and he can just go 5 yards and slide, your quarterback's going to be meeting some defensive tackles. If you have Cam Newton, you do not care because he is 6'5", angry and mean. He's a living, breathing war machine.
Yeah.
And he is going to run over most teams' defensive linemen and linebackers.
Yeah. And this Auburn defense has a lot of guys. You know, Nick Fairley ended up being, like, I think, a top 5, top 10 pick in the NFL draft.
Yeah. And we're still at this point where the spread offense, even though Florida had been very physical, the spread offense is still associated with finesse football. But I defy anybody to watch Auburn, that Cam Newton Auburn team, and go, well, that spread football ain't going to be physical enough to make the SEC.
No, this was one of the first times, I think Utah against Bama, I feel like that's another time it felt physical. I may actually have that wrong when I think about it. But this is like one of the first championship spread teams where you're like, well, they just kicked their ass. Because you go back and you watch like the Cam back. Auburn doesn't come back by throwing the ball. They come to back by just Cam Newton running the ball down everyone's throat.
It was like what you felt like you were watching the game of football change, and you felt like, oh, if Herschel Walker was playing in nowadays, he'd be a quarterback and not a running back. Or Bo Jackson would be a quarterback instead of a running back. It felt like you were watching something on a fundamental level.
Yeah, new, and if he stayed at Florida, this would have been the next evolution from Tebow.
Yes.
Because you know, this he was the Tim Tebow like, who can throw a lot better.
Yes, because Cam Newton was a far more accurate passer than Tim
Tebow. No, and like Cam Newton went
Tim
on
to Tim Tebow might
NFL.
Have been a better runner, which people forget. Because Tim Tebow was much yeah. more natural.
But Cam
more,
would go on to become
yeah,
mucho success in the NFL, MVP. Yes. You can't say he was a bust. When he won an MVP, he's really good.
Cam Newton's an amazing and Cam Newton is the one of the most respected player among other players in the NFL.
Except like Cam Newton.
If you ask like NFL players who they're more afraid of playing, they'll say Cam Newton.
Yeah, because you hit him and you bounce off. It's scary. And if they... It was, you know, his rookie year, he did great. It's the only year he's ever had a good receiver. Wow. So, yeah, this Auburn team, though, goes on. They play South Carolina. South Carolina played them earlier this year. Can't even hang with them this time. 56-17. Auburn were going to play Oregon in the BCS National Championship game in Phoenix. Wins that game on a last-second field goal.
Pretty denies Chip Kelly his national title.
Yeah. And, pretty good little game, but this was – I want to talk about this before we kind of move on really quick. But this was like kind of when everyone from the SEC kind of got a chance to get a title, kind of the last time this happened, that it wasn't just Bama dominating. It's like
yeah.
Florida, Tennessee, LSU, Auburn all got national championships during this run. It's a big deal. You don't see that in the Big Ten.
This also felt like the year that other conferences – I mean, yeah, we've now had a couple of SEC teams in a row, but when Auburn comes out of nowhere and wins it, this is when it really starts, like, the anti-SEC resentment starts to build up.
Yeah, especially with the stuff, like, Cam Newton is a...
Is a traitor! The SEC,
and listen, if Cam Newton's not on your team... Yeah, and if Cam Newton's not on your team, you probably don't like him because he's a pretty cocky guy. He plays football a different way, which I love guys who play like that, but they play on a team I don't like, I hate them. So I get it. I get
also the fact that the reason why he got away with getting paid to come to college is because his dad is a pastor and the money that was funneled to get him to come to Auburn was funneled through charitable donations to a church. So there was no way to really trace it back and go, this wasn't, you know, this
was
legal.
Which, hey, people, that happens a lot more than you think.
That is also like feeding into every stereotype that people up north have about the South. Where it's just a bunch of damn crooked pastors everywhere you look. Everywhere you go down south, it's just nothing but crooked pastors.
Yeah.
It's like, well, they're
Auburn,
not wrong either.
Auburn goes on to win. Cam Newton goes on to be the number one pick in the draft the next year. Heisman winner. Auburn wouldn't see success like that ever again.
Well,
they went to a national. We'll talk about
later,
that next week.
That team's pretty fun. But
yeah. And we'll talk about that team later. The next damn, we got two more to do before we're done with this episode. So I want to go to, what year are we going to here? 2011. The year that killed the BCS.
Let's just you're missing a year, aren't you? No, you're
no.
not. You're right on the money. Right on the money.
I do that a lot too, though, when I think about this, so yeah. Doesn't it feel like this one happened before, the Cam Newton one?
It's so weird that one of the funnest seasons of all time, and that led to one of the funnest national championship games of all time, is immediately followed by as big a dirge. You know, it's basically like, what's that movie, Kohanatistasi, Life Out of Balance, where the end is just like a space shuttle blowing up. In slow motion while people make like throat singing. Yeah, that's what this next season was like.
Yeah, because you get LSU, starts off the year playing Oregon, and beats them 40-27.
Just a convincing ass kicking.
Yeah, and LSU, they play West Virginia, they kick their ass earlier in the year, they kill Florida, they kill Tennessee. Let's see, they kill Auburn, and they run into number two, Alabama.
And the way...
they win 9-6 in overtime. One of the most hyped up, most disappointing things, I think, in American sports history. Probably up there with Al Capone's vault. streaming TV, like, things ever. I don't even imagine, like, how bad the ratings must have been by, like, the third quarter. Where, like, your average American's like, I'm not watching this shit. They're punting every play. happened twice!
Yeah. Yeah. But as soon as it was over, you knew it was going to happen because every single talking head was like, these are clearly the best two teams in the whole country.
And they were. To be fair, they were.
Well, there was a team in Norman, Oklahoma. Not Norman. Where's there was a team somewhere else in Oklahoma that might have had an argument with you that year.
Stillwater,
that's it.
Okay, yeah. State?
Yeah, Oklahoma State. That was the year they went undefeated, I believe, and missed.
Yeah.
Or no, they had one loss.
Yeah, and is like similarly with Bama, destroys everyone else, loses to LSU. So you kind of understand why you would want the rematch because literally these teams blew out everyone else they played, but each other.
Yeah.
So,
but Oklahoma State. Had won their conference. They also had one loss, but they were conference champions, and they played an extremely exciting brand of football. That was the team that had what was the big ugly redhead who's still in the NFL?
Derek Anderson.
He's still in the NFL as a backup quarterback.
I have no idea. I thought it was Derek Anderson. No, he was at Oregon State.
Yeah, he was at Oregon State in like 2003. He's a real tall fucker. Played baseball before he went back to football. And then they had Justin, I believe Justin Blackman was on that team as the wide receiver.
Yeah.
So they had this really devastating five-star wide receiver and a quarterback who was really excellent and that offense.
No, peaking. Dez Bryant.
Dez Bryant, that's right. That was the Dez Bryant team.
Yeah.
And so there were a lot of people who wanted to see Oklahoma State versus LSU. We would not get that. Instead, we got a rematch of the game of the century.
And it ended 21-0 in favor of Alabama, by the way.
Do you remember when LSU tried to switch their offense to the Paul Johnson option? Because they had become so desperate about their inability to move the ball whatsoever. That they just started trying to run the option.
Yeah. So, but Dan, this is the first. Yeah. So we talked about this earlier because, like, this national championship, like, it doesn't matter. It was boring. It's remembered as one of the most boring ever. But, like, it kind of doesn't matter in the grand scheme because what matters is the conversation around it, where people go, "Well, this probably should have been multiple teams getting a shot here. I mean, had a shot to play the championship because, yeah, Alabama and LSU probably should play each other again." But Oklahoma State should have gotten a shot at somebody to play in.
Yep.
And this is when a lot of people agree a 14 playoff made a lot of sense.
And this is the point where the other conferences, because what, you know, when people talk about what it takes to get a playoff and what it takes to get, you know, changes to the playoff, people complaining about things does nothing. Because the power structure in college football is the presidents of the schools. They're the ones who decide what happens.
Yeah,
It's not like people try to make ESPN out to be the ones in charge. If ESPN was in charge, buddy, the Rose Bowl would not be on January 1st when they don't have a playoffs game on there. Like they would not be like if ESPN really ran this sport the way people say ESPN does. There's a lot of shit that would change. Yeah, but
yeah, and the first thing is we'd have one mega conference. Because usually like you'd want Oklahoma and Alabama to play every
year. Yeah, half the teams in P5 football would be booted out and sent down to a different level.
Yeah, you think ESPN will put Vanderbilt in their TV?
Yeah, they absolutely do not. But, you know, this was the point where the people who actually have power, which is the end, you know, the major school presidents started going, wait, we didn't even get a chance to play, like, the SEC has won this many years in a row, and now the fact that they've won this many years in a row means that they get the benefit of the doubt to get two teams in? Like, it's bad enough that an SEC team keeps winning every year, but now they get both teams in the thing? Fuck this.
Yeah, because what the SEC had done, they had gone from kind of like the butt of the joke to, like, who are these weird people trying something different with this conference championship game? To, oh, these guys are starting to win. This is fun. To, oh, these guys are kicking our ass, and we didn't really like them that much to begin with.
It's basically like the guy who lived in your neighborhood who everybody thought was a weasel, and then suddenly he goes and makes a trip down to Miami and comes back with a ton of money, even though his grocery business has never been that successful. But now he's got he moves like down the street a little bit and builds a brand new house that costs like $2 million. And it's like, well, he must have sold some coke, or he must have. He must have gone and done a coke run off the coast.
Yeah. Or like, name when you're a kid, like a guy everyone picks on leaves for the summer, comes back, hit puberty. It's pretty big, and now he's kicking everybody's ass. And no one really catches up with him until, like, everyone's about 18.
Yeah.
That's kind of like the SEC. SEC was, like, the first modern era, like, of this century football conference to, like, hit puberty.
Yep, I think that's probably a more relatable analogy than mine.
Yeah, you're drug smuggling.
Look, I know like multiple people whose business was about to go out of business, and then they suddenly had a cash infusion from some unknown investors
from a pastor. But anyway, so yeah, they get this national championship. Oh, okay, never mind, I'm sorry. So Alabama wins, boring game. This kind
Everybody
of
hates forward. It.
We're going to do the playoff, right? But it doesn't happen for another 2 years.
It's not going to happen for a few seasons, but this is the point at which it becomes inevitable.
And this stuff takes time to do because there's a lot of moving parts in getting a playoff to happen in college football.
Basically, though, at this point, the people who make the decisions, it became about, okay, let's make our partners at the bowls.
And Dan,
let's get them organized and ready to know that we are, you know, let's start working on them to try to get them organized to how they fit in, because we're no longer going to take no from them as an answer.
Yeah.
They're going to have to get on board, so let's start lobbying them to do it in a way that they can
live. Do you remember any major pushback from the SEC, or do they kind of invite this playoff thing too?
At this point, they were kind of so far out and voted, and I think they also at this point had so much confidence that it was like, hey, sure, add more. We'll make more money, and we'll still beat your ass.
For the first few years, I mean, they've been right half the time. So
yeah, they're a little bit different now, because now they aren't exactly gung-ho on expanding it. You know, they're a little bit more cagey about that than they were when they went to four. At this point, they were like, yeah, fine, add 20 teams. We'll whip all of them.
Yeah.
SEC.
So that leads us, Dan, we're 2 years away from the playoff. And we're not going to talk about 2013 this week, because I want to move on and talk about 2012. I'll spend our last remaining time talking about this, because we've talked about him earlier. He's our boy, Mark Richt. This was his last shot.
He came so close.
A yard away. This Georgia team is probably one of the best Georgia teams ever. They had one loss. Spurrier, again at South Carolina, beats them 35-7. Besides that, they beat all their old demons.
Do you remember what Spurrier's line was about Georgia?
No, what was it?
He was like, yeah, I always like playing Georgia early in the year. You know they're going to have a couple guys suspended. They never can keep those guys out of trouble in the off season.
Yeah, and they could.
Which is very funny to me.
But anyway, Georgia rolls through. Lose at South Carolina, but they beat everybody else. They roll in to play number two Alabama, who was undefeated, coming off a controversial national championship, if you will. Not for them being in there, but just everything about it. Didn't faze Bama. Because they go undefeated in the regular. Nope, they don't. I'm sorry. They don't go undefeated in the regular season. Some team, Texas A&M? This is out of conference game in November.
Yeah, we haven't. There's something we haven't talked about.
Yeah. Well, this is around the time.
This crazy thing happened in college football around this point.
Yeah.
Where God, how do you even start talking about the 2010s realignment? Okay, so two things happened. I'm going to try to make this really short and sweet. But two things happened. The Big East falls apart. The Big East has been teetering on the edge of disaster for a while. Ever since the ACC basically came and took all of their most valuable teams, and they're just sort of hanging on by a thread. So the Big East is basically at this point where if anything upsets the apple cart, they're going to go down.
Yeah.
And then what is the thing that upsets the apple cart? It's Nebraska. Nebraska has spent most of the 2000s getting the shit kicked out of them. In particular, they had a chance to win the Big 12 title, and they believe they got screwed by the referees against Texas. Nebraska has spent years being pissed off at the power that Texas has in the league, even though they're founding members. And then the Big 10 has had 11 teams for, at that point, almost 20 years, and the Big Ten decides they want a 12th team so they can get a conference championship. And they look around, they ask Notre Dame, Notre Dame says no, and then they go and ask Nebraska. And Nebraska is, at this point, annoyed with their conference. They're thinking that they could win the Big Ten easier, which is always the mistake every team makes when they change conferences, is not respecting how good the conference they're moving to is. And Nebraska leaves the Big 12 for the Big 10. And at that point, everything starts to spin out of control.
Yeah, especially in the Big 12, because a lot of these teams, specifically A&M, go, oh, well, fuck Texas. If Nebraska's leaving, we're going to get out of here.
No, that's not what happens originally. That's not what happens originally. And and I'm leaving out one of the most important things. The Big 12, Texas announces the Longhorn Network. That they're going to have their own TV network on ESPN that's just devoted to Texas. And the biggest thing that's happening in college football at this point is conference networks. The Big Ten invented it. They started up the Big Ten Network when everybody thought that was crazy, and it became a license to print money.
Yeah.
The SEC has already announced they'll be getting an SEC network pretty soon.
And the bigger deal, all those like little SEC games you used to have to find on syndication or pay-per-view for, they're now on an ESPN channel.
Yeah, they're all going to be on ESPN, so you'll never have to do that
killed,
shit ever again.
Yeah, this killed the pay-per-view college football business, which we probably need to visit one day. So it is kind of like an interesting thing.
Yeah, I want to do a whole episode on pay-per-view and college sports one day.
It is pretty interesting, though.
The SEC, you know, so the SEC is getting a network. The Big Ten already has a network. The Pac-12 is, or the Pac-10 is talking about starting their own network as well, but they're thinking, you know, well, we'd like to add some more teams maybe. But everybody knows that the Pac-10 is exploring a network. And originally it looks like once Nebraska leaves the Big 12, that Texas A&M, and then, you know, who would have known who the next two teams was? It might have just been those two. We're going to leave the Big 12 and join the Pac-10. There was some talk of Oklahoma State coming. Some people said Baylor and Texas Tech. Some people said just Texas A&M. But it was definitely going to be Texas and Texas A&M going to the Pac-10. And Texas killed the deal because they wouldn't give up the Big 12 or their Longhorn network.
Yeah.
At that point, Texas A&M went, you just fucked us. Because we were going to get out of this conference, which is now suddenly unstable. It's unstable because you made it that way because of your dumb network. Because that's the number one thing that pushes Nebraska out the door is that, well, if Texas has their own network, then there can't be a Big 12 network. Because who the fuck is going to pay for a Big 12 network that doesn't have Texas in it at all?
Yeah, so fuck it.
So basically, Texas, instead of having a Big 12 network, we're just going to have Texas make all the money. Fuck that. We're going to the Big 10. Texas sticks with that deal, even though it becomes clear that this is a bad idea because it's causing their conference to collapse. And instead of them getting out of the whole situation and going, well, let's not do that, we're just going to join the Pac-10, they hang on to that network, and Texas A&M goes, well, fuck you then. And they go join the SEC. The SEC suddenly needs a 14th team because The SEC wasn't exactly looking into expanding, but once Texas A&M became available, they were
you
like,
"You don't
well,
say
yeah.
no to A&M and all the money they bring."
Yeah, we're you know? We're not saying no to the Houston TV market. We'd yeah. very much like to have the Houston.
No,
TV
and
market
if you're like
in
LSU and Arkansas, you want A&M there.
Right.
It's a national rivalry. It's proven to be a pretty big rivalry already. It's a money-making thing, so.
And so that means that this SEC needs a 14th team. West Virginia almost gets the spot, and that's an interesting what-if scenario. It was like, what if West Virginia had gotten in the SEC? Because
they probably would have been better in Missouri.
Well, I think it would have worked out for everybody if they if SEC had picked West Virginia, because A, West Virginia is rad as hell, and their fans are the best fans in college football.
Oh, they'd fit in great,
and they would have fit in absolutely perfectly in the SEC. And I think Missouri would have just ended up in the Big Ten instead of Rutgers, and everyone would have been happier.
Yeah,
but the SEC picks Missouri, who's desperate to get out of the Big 12 at this point. They had tried to join the Big Ten the year before, and the Big Ten had chose Nebraska instead. So Missouri had been looking for the door, and then suddenly this SEC thing is open, and they go to the SEC. The Big 12 now is trying to put the pieces back together. West Virginia pays a huge buyout fee from the Big East to lead the Big East, and they end up joining the Big 12, along with Texas Christian, who has been one of the best G5 programs for quite
a few
years. Yeah,
so this
now.
Also in turn kills the Big East plan to kind of merge with the Mountain West, right?
Yeah, because Boise State and Texas Christian were going to join the Big East.
Yeah.
Texas Christian had actually already formally joined the Big East. They renege on the Big East and go to the Big 12. All of that Big East expansion stuff, like, well, we need to expand to stay alive, all of that falls apart. The Big East itself collapses because the basketball programs pull the plug on the whole deal and leave and take the name with them. That's how we end up with the American Conference.
Yeah.
Pitt, Louisville, and Syracuse announced they're going to leave the league. And pretty soon after, it gets announced that Syracuse and Pitt are joining the ACC. And Louisville just keeps themselves out there until the Big Ten ends up taking Maryland for some reason nobody's ever truly understood. And Louisville takes their place in the ACC. So all of these musical chairs, it all gets started by Texas being extremely selfish and stupid.
Which I don't know if you're listening, you're thinking. Yeah. I don't know if you're listening, you're like, well, why go through all this? Because it kind of leads to what Nick Saban has to do later, because he loses this game to a guy named Johnny Manziel in A&M, who's running a funky little spread thing. Another brick or another crack in the wall of Nick Saban, like not wanting to run more spread stuff, kind of opens up here. Sidetrack, but back to this. Bama loses to A&M by 5. They blow out everyone else the rest of the year. They run in to play Georgia. Like I said, one of the best Georgia teams we'll ever see until 2 years ago. It's the Georgia team that had A.J. Green, I believe, Dan, who
Aaron Murray at quarterback, the greatest 5'11" quarterback of all time.
Yeah. Who's their running? Was this Gurley?
This is No'Shawn Marino, I believe.
No'Shawn Marino? No, Marino was there in 08.
I believe.
This would have been like the end of No'Shawn Marino then.
I believe this is before Gurley. Because Gurley just
No,
left.
It was. I'm sorry. It was. No, it was Todd Gurley's freshman year.
Huh. Was No'Shawn on the
starting,
team at all?
Though. No, No'Shawn was in the NFL by now.
Huh.
Because No'Shawn came in like 08, 07.
Who's the starter on this team?
I believe it is Gurley or Marshall Morgan.
Well, the immortal Marshall Morgan, then.
Marshall Morgan. It looks like Gurley, though, is like kind of the guy at this point, though. Anyway, it's a pretty good Georgia team. Ty Gurley, A.J. Green.
That's pretty good solid. Enough for me.
Yeah. Or maybe A.J. Green had left. Anyway, this is a solid Georgia team. They don't have their roster on their wiki page. It's really throwing me off. By the way, can I just say this really quick after doing some research with Wikipedia and some other stuff? Alabama fans detail everything on the Wikipedia entry. It is like, if you want to know who the third string lost his virginity to, there's like a link to an article about it. Like, big ups to the Bama Wikipedia community. Like, a little weird, a little obsessive, but you do a good job.
It's actually Conrad Thompson.
Yes. But this personally. Georgia team, Dan, goes to the SEC Championship, takes on Big Bad Alabama, and comes up, what, a yard short.
Oh, yeah.
In Atlanta.
And
winner of this game probably wins the national championship, because the other undefeated team that year is Notre Dame. And
everybody knew they were going to beat the piss out of Notre Dame. Like, every team in the SEC was licking their chops. And it's just like, man, if we could just win the SEC this year, we're going to beat the piss.
This is a Notre Dame team that kind of was, you could definitely say, was coached up and won a lot of games barely.
It was also a team that just got lucky that a lot of the traditionally top-level teams on their schedule just had shitty years.
Yeah.
So it's like, yeah, they beat USC. Yeah, they beat Stanford. Yeah, I think Michigan was on this schedule. But it was like all of those teams were bad that year.
Yeah.
So it was like, okay, well, yeah, you beat them. They also beat Pitt by a field goal. They beat Wake by a field goal. They beat Purdue by an overtime, I believe. It was just like, a lot of wins against terrible teams by the skin of their teeth.
Yeah.
And
this Bama team, mind you, Dan, can I go through some of the names on this team really quick?
They had like 7 running backs that ended up being in the NFL, right?
They didn't. I was incredible. Julio Jones is gone at this point. He's in the NFL. So A.J. Green's gone for you. But you have Amari Cooper, wide receiver. Quarterback, you have A.J. McCarron, maybe one of the greatest Alabama quarterbacks of all time. Running back.
A.J. McCarron was garbage. A.J. McCarron was just lucky he got to play surrounded by all the guys you're going to list off.
At running back, you had Eddie Lacy, T.J. Yeldon, Kenyon Drake. All three. Well, I think Lacy's done, but all three have been in the NFL in the past 4 years.
Yeah, Eddie Lacy was great until he ate himself out of the sport.
Yeah. Basically. All these teams, Dan, I mean, all these running backs went in the first round. So your third year, Kenyon Drake. Too. Yes. This is a pretty good Alabama team. They annihilate Notre Dame, but this feels like to me another tide in the TV people maybe wanting to play off, because like this game sucks. So another year, another shitty game, and I don't have ratings in front of me, but I think they went down.
Well, can we talk about how our like everybody knew this game was over after the first drive?
Yeah.
Because you just looked at it and went, oh my God, Alabama is like 100 times bigger than them.
Yeah.
Like, this is not even, like, this looked like a college team playing a high school team.
Yeah, so this is like a big flex fantasy dominance. But Dan, the bigger thing here, this is Nick Saban's second national championship at Alabama.
Sure.
And this is, besides 1 year, he's not going to look back.
Yeah.
That'll be the next year. We'll talk about that next week, though, and kind of get into the end of the BCS, the playoff era, the dominance. This is really when the Saban dominance kicks off around this time.
Yeah, and this is his
third national championship. I'm sorry.
Yeah, and I would say one of the hallmarks of this era, as we're talking about, is this is right when Saban derangement syndrome takes over the SEC, where Saban is beating everybody. Playing a certain style of football, which for whatever reason really resonates with a lot of SEC fans. It's like, we gotta get tougher. We can't beat them unless we get tougher. And so you start to see a bunch of SEC schools firing their coaches and then making decisions to hire coaches based on, have they worked for Nick Saban before? Do they run a system similar to Nick Saban? So look at some of the coaches that get hired in the time period that we're talking about here. Look at the teams that change jobs.
Yeah, and we'll talk about this next week, Dan, because there were three teams that had success against Saban around this point.
Yeah.
I know two of them definitely did something different, and one kind of did too. But we'll talk about that next week.
So we're starting to see the seeds of the demise.
Yes.
Being planted.
But also a few schools realizing, hey, we can do something different and it might be beneficial.
And we're already seeing that one team has figured out the actual way to do this and everybody else is going to take a while. But
yeah.
Auburn, as usual, America's smartest school.
Yes.
Has already figured out
where everyone went to school at Auburn. Look at their commercials.
This is the thing, this is my biggest belief about Auburn. nobody who goes there is very smart, but they're all like future, like clever boys who will all be like way more successful.
Maybe most people at Auburn aren't smarter than the boys at MIT, but they will definitely scam an MIT guy in a second. Scamming is IQ. Auburn's the smartest school, you know?
Nobody at Auburn would have ever fallen for Fire Festival.
No.
Whereas you get these like Auburn. Stanford engineers who are like happily working on like an app called like a Fire app, which is going to somehow like replace, you know, WME. Like these idiots engineers who think that they can build an app and it will replace like having an agent in Hollywood.
Yeah.
Nobody at Auburn would ever fall for that because they know damn well that you get shit done by calling.
No, Auburn's scamming those guys by saying, well, we're the wallet inspectors. That's what Auburn is, the wallet inspectors of college football.
Like if Florida is the school in the SEC most likely to fall for some like Silicon Valley tech disruption bullshit, Auburn is
A&M.
You think it's more than Florida?
No, I'd scam A&M first.
I think Texas A&M's the dumbest school, but I think Florida is the school you can fool the most by just saying like innovate, TED Talk, business. Like if you just walk into Florida and like say that, hey, I worked for Steve Jobs, they'll hand you like the entire school.
Yeah.
Whereas if you tried that shit at Auburn, everybody just go, I ain't even heard of that quarter. Is that Greg Feller? Wait, no, he went there. Sorry.
But anyway, Dan, we're gonna we'll wrap it up next week with this look at the recent history of the SEC. And after that we will look forward to another topic.
Yes, sir.
And it probably won't be a multi-part.
At most, it'll be two parts. We will not do another four-parter.
We will not do another four-parter. That was supposed to be a three-parter, and then like you realize there's way too much to talk about.
Yeah.
So that's it for me.
Yeah, that's it for me. And play the music, Jason.